Now, what I like is that have these back after the Sunday school, and so we'll keep them here, and then when we're done with this section anyway, then I'll let you have a copy if you want a copy. So these, but this color copy of this, the 12 tribes of ancient Israel. And so we're in Joshua 17 and 18. So should be enough for, I think, almost everybody. And so let's look at this first of all, then we'll come back to it later on as well. But all right, so on the map, you can see over in the left hand, the big blue area, that's the Mediterranean Sea. Then on the land itself, you can see the two bodies of water. These help identify the Israel. Up the top, there's the Sea of Galilee. There's another little sea up there, Hula or Kula is the name of it. But Sea of Galilee, and then coming down to Jordan to the Dead Sea. All right, and then at the top of the Dead Sea, if you look to the left or west towards the Mediterranean, you see Jerusalem there. So it's easy to identify Jerusalem. If you find the Dead Sea, just look to the left of the top there. All right, some of the other cities that are of significance with the Bible. A couple other items. If you look way down there under Simeon, you see within Simeon you have Beersheba. If you look way up there at the top, Dan, north of the Sea of Galilee, that's Dan. So these are the help with the expression from Dan to Beersheba. So this is the southern range to the northern range. Now actually the Lord gave them more land all the way from the Nile, it looks like, all the way up to the Euphrates. But this is the land that they had conquered at this time. Also, if you look at the tribes that we've discussed here, you've got Judah. Judah's the purplish color there. Large tract of land there. And then within Judah is Simeon. So the Lord dealt severely with Simeon because Simeon and Levi were the ones who murdered the Shechemites. And so the Lord took them to task on that. So Simeon cannot get in or out of his land or their land without going through Judah. So, but Simeon has that portion. But Judah has a large section here. And then we've talked about Manasseh. So Manasseh is the yellow there. And you can see both on the west side or of the Jordan and on the east side, so that's the half-tribe. Also looking at the half-tribe underneath Manasseh on the right of, or east of Jordan is Gad, and then below Gad is Reuben. And so we've got those two and a half tribes. Gad and Reuben are two tribes, and then Manasseh is a half a tribe, of course. Then looking back here to Judah and Jerusalem, and you see right above Jerusalem is Benjamin, small tribe, small area. Then left of Benjamin or towards the west, there's Dan. And then above Dan and Benjamin is Ephraim. So remember, Ephraim and Manasseh were the two sons of Joseph. And then above Manasseh is Issachar, and then Zebulun, Naphtali, and Asher. So we find out Dan, going back here to Dan, had this area. But they felt too small, so they went up and captured the city up north. And so Dan had two territories there, actually. Then, of course, you see the ancient nations there, Aram up north, and then Ammon, and then down towards the Dead Seas, Moab, and Edom. And then if you had the extended map, you go up north, and then way over to the the right or the east would be Nineveh, and then beyond Nineveh would be Babylon. And so Babylon really you'd go east and then south again. So Nineveh and Babylon would really be almost directly east of Jerusalem, but way over on the right hand of the map. So anyway, this is a visual here. And so in going through some of these chapters, 15 and following, some of the geographical locations are, we don't know where they are. And some of them there's several locations with the same name. And so this brings about some confusion from our point of view, but we believe this is generally the areas there for the tribes there. I might add that above Judah there is Benjamin. In Benjamin is Jericho and Bethel. All right. Then in Ephraim is Shiloh. So Shiloh is going to play an important role in Samuel. First Samuel will deal with Shiloh today. And so these are some of the key areas here. Way up there by Megiddo. Now, on the coast is a city called Dor, but to the right of that is Megiddo. So that's there's the mountains of Megiddo and the plain of Megiddo. Then that yellow section and ending with a point, that's Mount Carmel. Mount Carmel, so that's where Elijah had his victory over the Baalites and so on. So anyway, some of the territories of the tribes as we're going through Joshua. So hopefully that helps some and gives you a visual so that you're not in your mind's eye of this land. You don't have a confusion. And it is superior to my artwork that I put up here. So I know you'll miss that, but anyway. So nevertheless, we're looking here, and I want to review quickly here a couple things in chapter 17. So 15 was land given to Judah. But as we saw their tale in the 15:63 says that as for the Jebusites, so the Jebusites, that's the name of the inhabitants of Jerusalem before it was renamed Jerusalem. The Jebusites, the inhabitants of Jerusalem, the children of Judah could not drive them out. But the Jebusites dwell with the children of Judah at Jerusalem unto this day. And so, although the area was conquered, and this was the Lord's chosen spot for worship, there was this opposition all the way down to David's day, when David finally had victory over Jebusites and named this Mount Zion. And so how appropriate that was for now the king of Israel to overtake the Jebusites, conquer Jerusalem, and so down in David's day. So, all right, then, this is an ongoing pattern that we've seen here, that not all of the Canaanites were driven out or slaughtered. So the idea was that the Jews were to come in. They were to go after the cities, kill all the Canaanites in the cities. And then when people would run, they'd chase them down and kill them. But they couldn't drive them all out. And so if they couldn't kill them, they were to drive them out. But the last thing they were to do was allow them to remain. But this is what they did. They allowed them to remain. And now the lack of victory here was not because of the Lord's weakness. Remember what the Lord said there back in Joshua chapter 1. Joshua chapter 1, where he says in 5:1-5 says to Joshua, and who's the leader of all the people this time, 1:5, there shall not any man be able to stand before thee all the days of thy life. As I was with Moses, I will be with thee. I will not fail thee nor forsake thee. So why is it the Jebusites were able to stand? All right, so we see in the process of time, and there was several years as we indicated here, 5 to 7 years, at least 5 years, probably more like 7 years for them, or even Caleb to get the place where he took his Mount Hebron. And so there's a period of time here, and so they didn't drive them all out. And was that a lack on the Lord's power? No, it was a lack on their faith, lack of their faith. So we've noticed that scenario there. And then we look further in chapter 16. Chapter 16, tail end of that, verse 10. And here it says, they drave not out the Canaanites that dwell in Gezer, but the Canaanites dwell among the Ephraimites unto this day and serve under tribute. So the Ephraimites could not drive them out, could not have victory here. And so we see failure on the part of the Ephraimites. And in our current chapter 17, we'll see in verse 18, there was a challenge given to Joseph's tribes to drive out the Canaanites as well. So I think one of the things that we can learn from this is that the Jews, their promised victory, they were to go in as military people. And so that's what you have state religion, military in nature. And they were to go in and destroy all the Canaanites. And the Canaanites had had a 400 year or more heads up that the Jews were coming in and the Lord was going to kill them. And yet they strengthened themselves and so on. But here I think some lessons we can learn right away is that in the battle, both with them and for us in the spiritual battle, there's a tendency to get tired. Tendency to get tired in the battle because the battle is relentless. Now here we see, for instance, Satan was using the Jebusites to keep the Jews from having the promised city, Jerusalem, the very spot where the Lord wanted worship to be done. That's Deuteronomy chapter 12. So way back then, Satan was holding them off, holding them off, holding them off. Finally, the Lord used David to conquer permanently Jerusalem. So the Jews got tired in the battle. When they got tired in the battle, they began to compromise. They began to compromise, and they made the Canaanites put them under tribute or tax them and so on. they made leagues with them, and so things like that. And yet this is contrary to the Lord's will. So in the long run, you see, even for Christians, we have a tendency to get tired in the battle. When we get tired in the battle, then we start to use human reasoning, stop trusting the Lord, and difficulties come here. Now, if you recall what Paul said there in the well-known passage, but it's not so well-known that we can't read it again. 2 Timothy chapter 4. Now you think of the life of Paul. 2 Timothy chapter 4. He says, I have fought a good fight, 4:7. I have finished my course. I've kept the faith. So notice here, he didn't say, I have enjoyed the Sunday school cookout. Didn't say that. Boy, this was all downhill. It was really easy sledding. I really enjoyed it. No, he fought the good fight. That way he's in the good fight. There are a lot of battles out there not worth getting into. You know, my experience of knowing pastors and so on, I've known some pastors to give up their church to get into politics. That's not the good fight. To give up God's will to pastor a church and to go into politics or something else. Or go into business or whatever. I mean, just for whatever reasons. The good fight is in the Lord's will. So he said, I fought a good fight. And so Paul can say this as he's anticipating being probably decapitated, as tradition tells us that, by Herod. by Nero, being decapitated. He's anticipating that. He can look back over his life. He said, I've fought the good fight. I didn't give up. I didn't quit. I didn't compromise. And so we see it can be done. But the tendency here is for believers to get tired in the battle, and then they begin to compromise. This is true. certainly, parents have a tendency to get tired in the battle and start to compromise and this and that and so on. And churches and pastors and church members get tired in the battle and look around and say, isn't there an easier way? You know, if we just changed a few things here, we'd have a bigger crowd. And we'd have a bigger crowd. We just get tired in the fight. It's just relentless. You know, Satan opposes us every day. And so it's easy to get tired in the battle. So they got tired in the battle, it seems. And so they tried to do things other ways. They tried to come up with human reasoning and so on. So let's compromise. Let's make them pay tribute. I mean, why kill them when we can gain the taxes and money from them? And this is brilliant. No, it's not. Because they began to intermarry with their children. Their children began to intermarry and so on. So we notice this then through all this. Now, on the part of the Jews, so looking at this theologically, they didn't lose their inheritance. They didn't lose their inheritance. So our inheritance is salvation. They didn't lose their inheritance. We don't lose our inheritance if we compromise. But they lost the Lord's blessing on them in their believer's life. The Jews did. They lost the Lord's blessing on them in their life. And likewise we, when we compromise and we have other plans and we change things and this and that, then we lose the Lord's blessing in our life, in this life and the life to come. So we can learn a few things here from all this. Now, in chapter 17, I want to pick it up here again in verse 14. And this, we see the complaint. So in 17:14, now I'm reviewing here, but there may have been a few things I didn't touch on the first time around, so I'm going to give another shot, and that's called reviewing, all right? Anyway, verse 14, children of Joseph spake unto Joshua, saying, why hast thou given me but one lot and one portion to inherit? All right, now, wait a minute. How were the lots distributed? And who distributed and decided on the lots? It was the Lord. So here the complaint to Joshua, but this is a complaint that is kind of oblique. It hits Joshua, but really it's a complaint to the Lord. Lord, why have you given me but one lot and one portion? They're really addressing, they're criticizing the Lord's choice here. Seeing I am a great people, for as much as the Lord hath blessed me hitherto. All right, so you're going to get in trouble, children of Joseph, in this statement here. So here's the wisdom of Joshua here. Joshua answered them, if thou be a great people, now great in numbers idea, and then get thee up to the wood country and cut down for thyself there in the land of the Perizzites and of the giants, if Mount Ephraim be too narrow for thee. In other words, on the land that you now have inherited, there is some unconquered territory. There's the hill country. There's trees there. I mean, you got resources. Hill country, trees there. And, the Canaanites are there, but we already know that. And the giants are there. But we already know the giants were there. So I'm not going to give you more land over here. I want you to take care of the land you have, the stewardship that you have. You take care of that. See, our concern is, I want more, I want more, I want more. Well, take care of the stewardship that you have. You've got stewardship responsibility. And you take care of the stewardship you have, then you won't want more. Yeah, I mean, the stewardship the Lord gives you, and you, if you're frugal with it and take care of it and deal with it in the proper way and so on and so forth, you don't need more. You've got enough. You got enough. So, verse 16, and the children of Joseph said, the hill is not enough for us. All right? It's not enough. And, oh yeah, let us add in a few other issues going on. And all the Canaanites that dwell in the land of the valley have chariots of iron. Oh, so it's really not, the hill's not enough. It's got Canaanites with chariots of iron. Well, what can foot soldiers do against chariots of iron? You know, it's like asking, what could Caleb do against giants? I mean, same question, right? So, both they who are of Beth Shean and their towns, and they who are of the Valley of Jezreel. And Joshua spake unto the house of Joseph, even to Ephraim and the Manasseh, saying, thou art a great people. You already said that. You have a lot of people. And that's great power. So you're a great people. You've got military might here and so on. Thou shalt not have one lot only. But the mountain shall be thine, for it is a wood, and thou shalt cut it down, and the outgoings of it shall be thine. For thou shalt drive out the Canaanites, though they have iron chariots, and though they be strong. So here they just need to trust the Lord, and by faith conquer this hill, country that was really part of theirs. Now the interesting thing here as well is that they weren't pleased with what the Lord had given them. They wanted more, and they wanted a different, something different. Here again, I think by application, we can say, the grass is always greener somewhere else. You know that job you've given me, Lord? You know the job you've given me? Got all these problems. My boss, the colleagues, the money, you know, all these things. But I've been looking around. That job somebody else I know has, boy, that's really an ideal job. If I could do that, because I know somebody and they're really enjoying what they're doing. If I could just get over there. No, it's not the issue. Now, I understand there may be places in life where you move from a job or occupation and so on. But too many people are just complaining all the time about what they have, and the Lord's placed you there to be a testimony. To help you grow in the Lord and trust Him, and for you to pray and see the Lord move obstacles out of the way. You don't like that boss? Well, maybe the Lord will give him a promotion or her a promotion, move him on, or whatever. The Lord can do all these things, but then that's true as well. Lord of all the states in the Union, and I have to live in Connecticut. I mean, there may be taxes on the toll taxes now. I mean, there may be an increase in taxes. And of all the places in the world, I've got to live in Connecticut. I know somebody living over here, and they've got it made. They've got it made. And I've got to live here. So people, but I wonder if they're getting any truth over there. I wonder if they're getting truth. No, but they've got, they've got everything else. Well, you better stick with the truth and realize there's a battle going on here. And so our tendency is to complain to the Lord. Lord, don't like what you've given me. It's not enough, or this or that and so on. But how about giving me this? Well, why don't you be satisfied with what the Lord gives you? Just be satisfied with what the Lord gives you. You know, the Lord who gives can take away. You're not satisfied with that? Well, maybe I'll take it away. Then what do you think? Well, I wish I had it back. But then just enjoy it while you have it. Yes. All right. So anyway, Joshua has to deal with them, and he tells them, basically, you go in faith and you conquer this land. All right, that's chapter 17. All right, let's move on to chapter 18. All right, chapter 18. Now, here we see we've got the remaining seven tribes. So in 18, 1 through 3. And the whole congregation of the children of Israel assembled together at Shiloh. All right, at Shiloh. So look on your map there. Where's Shiloh? Find Shiloh there. Mention that, Ephraim. Now, they had been meeting at Gilgal, but now they've moved to Shiloh. So now, the thing about Gilgal, it's right next to the Jordan, but it's on extremity of the land on the west side. But Shiloh now is more in a central position. And so here, under Joshua's leadership, he's moving to more of a central position here, Shiloh. And this is where the Ark of the Covenant is going to be placed and so on. Now notice it says here, and the whole congregation of the children of Israel assembled together at Shiloh and set up the tabernacle of the congregation. So this is the meeting place, the tent of meeting. The tent of meeting. And tent of meeting be a literal translation of tabernacle of the congregation, but tabernacle of the congregation, just like they had in the wilderness. They set up the tabernacle. So this is the place of meeting now, where the Lord wanted to meet with them. And the Ark of the Covenant, no doubt was there. If you recall back there in chapter 3, Joshua chapter 3, verse 6, for instance, Joshua 3:6, and Joshua spake unto the priests, saying, take up the Ark of the Covenant and pass over before the people. So the Ark of the Covenant represented the Lord's presence. Now we saw that in Samuel, by the way, and the Ark of the Covenant was later stolen. But the tent and the furniture. The tent and the furniture now is moved from Gilgal up to Shiloh. Up to Shiloh. And then the last part of verse 1 says, and the land was subdued before them. All right, verse 2. And there remained among the children of Israel seven tribes which had not received their inheritance. Now remember earlier, Joshua came in there at Gilgal and then Jericho and Ai and so on. So they took this, they had the central campaign and conquered these central cities. Then they had the southern campaign. They went down southern part, southwest. Then later on they had the northern campaign up there by Sea of Galilee. So they, in these three campaigns, they conquered central, south, and north Israel. But and then as they conquered all these areas, obviously there were some Canaanites who were not killed and so on. And so the... But now the Jews are, the Ephraim's tribe has been given land, and Manasseh and so on. So now we have seven tribes yet, and they had not received their inheritance yet. So verse 3 says, and Joshua said unto the children of Israel, how long are you slack to go possess the land which the Lord your God of your fathers have given you? So in other words, all 12 tribes were are kind of meandering around in the areas that had been distributed to Ephraim, Judah and Ephraim and Manasseh, yet they hadn't gone to take their own land. And so he repudiates them here. How long are ye slack? Word behind slack there is fail. How long will you fail? How long will you fail possessing the land which the Lord God of your fathers have given you? So the Lord's promised to give their fathers way back there, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. They haven't possessed the land yet. Oh, they've gone through there. They have had dominion over the land, but they haven't actually possessed the cities and so on. And so here he gives them a challenge. Gives them a challenge. Now, before we move on here, I want you to look back to the map. Again, I think from the map we can learn several biblical lessons. One is Judah had a tremendous amount of territory. In fact, in 19:9, so look at the map and then look at 19:9, Joshua 19:9. Now, the portion of the children of Judah was the inheritance of the children of Simeon, for the part of the children of Judah was too much for them. Therefore, the children of Simeon had their inheritance within the inheritance of them. So there was more territory here for Judah than there were people. So Judah had too much. Yet the tribes of Joseph saying, we don't have enough. But it's the Lord who's distributing the land here, the lot. So anyway, Judah had a tremendous amount of land, and here the Lord blessed and super blessed Judah because of Judah as a man. Judah as a man was faithful to the Lord in the end. Then Joseph, as a man, his two sons, notice their area. Manasseh, both sides, half tribe one, half tribe the other, and Ephraim. So here Joseph's two sons, Ephraim and Manasseh, had a tremendous amount of area as well. So it looks like his sons almost have equal, if not more, than Judah had. And the Lord blessed Joseph and his offspring because Joseph was faithful to the Lord. And Joseph was spiritually right with the Lord. And so the Lord allowed him to begin ruling, the second in command of Egypt, 30 years of age, because he had his heart right with the Lord. He forgave his brothers. And he indicated that because he named his first son Manasseh. And Manasseh means what again? Starts with F. Forgetting. Manasseh means forgetting. Forgetting. All right, forgetting. And so what did he forget? He forgot all the harm that was brought on him by his brothers. That's over. That's done. Not holding a grudge. I'm going to be used of God to help them. Think of that. And he did. And then Ephraim means blessing, or fruitful rather, fruitful. And the plural ending, or the dual ending on it, means a double fruitfulness there. So here we see that. Whereas Dan was a wicked people overall, and they demonstrated their wickedness when they took over the city of Dan and murdered everybody there. Simeon was a very wicked brother there. He, along with Levi, and only because the Levites later on defended Moses and so on, or Levi did the Lord bless the Levites. So we have some theological messages here with regard to these tribes and where they are and what's going on. So Judah really... has within Jerusalem. So from the language of scriptures, one verse it seems like Jerusalem's in Benjamin, but two passages seems like Jerusalem's in Judah. But that's the central point from the nation point of view, according to Ezekiel 5:5, the Lord put Jerusalem in the midst of the nations. And therefore, and the earth is in the midst of his creation. So you think, here is the piece of real estate that's in the center of God's whole creation called Jerusalem. And Judah and Benjamin were hovering right around it. Now remember with Benjamin, he was Rachel's second son, and Rachel was the beloved wife of Jacob. So we have... Jacob, and then Joseph, and then Benjamin. So Benjamin's given a choice spot here, although smaller. All right, so anyway, a little background on that. Now, we're back here to chapter 18, Joshua chapter 18. And here, so the Lord wants to, has them now meeting in Shiloh. I did want to mention a couple other things here, so if you recall, Shiloh remains all the way down to 1 Samuel chapter 3. And so we see in 3:21, 1 Samuel 3:21. So in case you missed the afternoon services, we deal with this. 1 Samuel 3:21, the Lord appeared again in Shiloh, for the Lord revealed himself to Samuel in Shiloh by the word of the Lord. So here Shiloh becomes, or is the center of worship. And it's about 15 or 18 miles north of Jerusalem on the map. So Shiloh is almost directly north, you can see on the map from Jerusalem, but it becomes a center of worship. Then chapter 4, you recall, the Philistines come in, they take the Ark of the Covenant out of Shiloh, and 421 here, the daughter-in-law of Phinehas, Phinehas' wife, for that matter, or daughter-in-law of Eli, she says, calls the child's name Ichabod, because the glory is departed from Israel, and they've taken the ark away from Shiloh. And then we look later on in Psalm 78, verse 60, says that the Lord destroyed Shiloh, basically. Psalm 78, 60. So anyway, so the Shiloh was the center of worship until the ark moved around after that. And then finally David. So let's look there, 2 Samuel chapter 5. The Lord's true king here, man after his own heart, David, in 2 Samuel 5:5 says that in verse 6, 5:6, where he's challenged by the king there, and the king and his men went to Jerusalem unto the Jebusites. And the inhabitants of the land, which spake unto David, saying, except thou take away the blind and the lame, thou shalt not come in hither, thinking David cannot come in hither. So here is the Satan's effort through the leadership, the king's inhabitant, king and the inhabitants of Jebus, to ridicule him, saying that you can't even get by the blind and the lame. I mean, you're so weak. Ridiculing David. And the Lord, I think, saying, all right, enough is enough. I'm going to use David. He's going to take over Jerusalem, which he did. So we see that in verse 7. Nevertheless, David took the stronghold of Zion, and the same is the city of David. So here we see, finally, the Lord's central spot in all of his creation is conquered by David and the Jews. All right, so... when we can see the big perspective, I mean, we look at the cosmos, focus down here on Earth, focus down here on Jerusalem. When we see the big picture, see how significant this is, and really what the Lord's doing in time and history and so on. All right, now we come back here. So Shiloh was the place. Now verse 4, so back here in 18:4, Joshua 18:4. give out among you three men of each tribe. So there's seven tribes, and three men are to be sent out. And I will send them, and they shall rise and go through the land and describe it, according to the inheritance of them, and they shall come again to me. So here we see the idea of describing. And so they're really inscribing or writing down. Word describe shows up again in verse 6 and 8. And notice here in verse 9, and the men went and passed through the land and described it by cities into seven parts in a book. So they're writing a book. So they've got three men per tribe. They're looking at the territory, the cities, the landmarks, natural geography, and so on. And they're mapping it out. They're writing it down in basically a book or a map. And they so he sent out three. I think the three here would be go along with your two or three witnesses, number one, as well as an odd number here. This would, if there's some question, you've got an odd number that would say, two might say, no, it's this, versus somebody saying, no, it's this. No. So that may be a factor here as well. But anyway, 21 were sent out. 21 inscribers or recorders or map makers, that's what they really were, they're map makers sent out and to this area. All right, so anyway, verse 4. Verse 5, he says, and they shall divide it into seven parts. Judah shall abide in their coast on the south, and the house of Joseph shall abide in their coast on the north. All right, so that'd be Ephraim and Manasseh. Coast here has to do with their territory, their borders, you might say. And 6, you shall therefore describe the land in the 7 parts, and bring the description hither to me, that I may cast lots for you here before the Lord our God. So as they went out, they went to cities. Now keep in mind, cities were usually established in ideal places where there'd be water supply, obviously, and other features here, perhaps for grazing and plants and so on and so forth. So these cities were put in certain places. So they basically went from city to city and followed what the Canaanites had already established. And these are ideal spots for our population. And so they went to these cities and locations. And so there may be natural boundaries that forced them to go this way or that way. So, but they're laying this out. And as we've already seen in some of these chapters, they went by this river, over by this city, by this woods, you know, and they're mapping this out. Once they map this out, so that would be for the other tribes, because Manasseh and Ephraim already had their land, Judah already had their land. Then they come back to Joshua, and Joshua, along with Eliezer, they would cast the lots, and the Lord would dictate then who got this portion of land. So ultimately, the land was distributed by the Lord. It's His will. It was His will. And He used these scribes here to go through the land and mark it out. So he stated that. So in verse 6, you shall therefore describe the land in 7 parts, and bring the description hither to me, that I may cast lots for you here before the Lord our God. So before the Lord our God, this would be back here in Shiloh, and the Lord and the Ark of the Covenant was there. So we're there. And so the Lord would be leading in all of this. So there couldn't be any complaint. Just like the tribe of Joseph complained, and that, all the massive land that they have, they were still complaining. And so that's the tendency of mankind, right? No matter what we have, it's not enough. I want more. We have to learn like they did, that we have a stewardship. It's the Lord, and His graciousness gives us whatever He gives us and expects us to be good stewards with this and take care of it. Not to compare it with somebody else. Well, you got more than me. That's not fair. You've got more than me. I want what you have. That's pride and jealousy and all these bad things. Be satisfied with what we have. Thank the Lord for it. And then be good stewards of it. So anyway, we find what the Lord is doing here. And so Joshua is carrying out the Lord's will here for these lands, for these people. All right, let's pray. Father, again, we thank Thee for the lessons we can learn from the book of Joshua. Bless us, we pray, and help us to retain these in our mind and heart and our practice, we ask. We pray in Jesus' name. Amen.